My name's Jack. If you haven't officially met me, I'm the lead pastor here, and we are honored. We are really honored that you are part of us today, part of this family. And I just really look forward to seeing you guys every week. I think about you during the week. I pray for you, some more than others. But we're really, really glad you're here today. So next week, as you heard, we're going to do Football Sunday. That's a great time to bring some friends. It's a little bit dicey for me because I don't get the material until about Thursday of this week. So if something doesn't work out, then we'll be kicking off our next series early, which is going to be 10 weeks, I think. This is all subject to change, but 10 weeks of Mark, the Jesus I knew. So Mark's gospel and Mark's perspective on Jesus, that'll lead us right up to Easter. That's going to be some really, really good stuff. So if you want to get ahead in your reading, jump into Mark. And then after Easter, I want to do a four-part series called Making Great Decisions. We all make decisions, right, every day. And when we look back at our life, it's kind of a sum of our choices and our decisions, good or bad. So I want to look at that and talk about, you know, how to make wise decisions and bring God into the equation and that sort of thing. But today I want to finish up our Selfless series. It's been a great series. If you missed it, everything's online. Week one, we talked about being, bold in witness. And some of you have already told me stories about where you were bold at work and you shared Jesus with a coworker or a friend. And they're great stories. It actually, God showed up and things worked out. And some of you were faithful in service. That was our week two talk, was faithful in service. And then last week we had Becky Olmsted. She came here and she taught about generosity, extravagant generosity. And she just always does a great job. So if you missed that one, make sure you get online and see it. Let me pray. Father, I just thank you for this morning. I pray that that you'll speak to each of us right now, that you'll teach each of us from your word. I pray that my words will be your words and that our hearts will just be open and postured to learn from you. And I just hope that at the end of this time, we look a little bit more like your son, Jesus. In his name I pray. Amen. So today I want to talk about being grateful in the grind. We all know there's a grind, right? You know what I mean by the grind? I mean, it's just life, right? Our work. Most of life is a grind, if we're honest with ourselves. How are we grateful in the grind? You know, marriage. Those of you who are married and you've been married a long time, there's a certain grind to marriage, isn't there? You've been married 10 years and it's like, pick up your socks, I'm not your mom. How many times do I have to tell you? And you just wish you could go back and redo the vows and put in, pick up your socks, you know. But then it was all flowery stuff. But, there's a lot between I do and till death do us part. There's a grind. There's a grind at work. There's a grind in our relationships. There's a grind in ministry and church. So how are we grateful in that? And I want to just unpack this a little bit, this idea, and just tell you personally, like, when I started this church 12 years ago, there were times, if I'm honest, where I would think, you know, when we get out of the rented facility and we own our own facility, then we'll be like a real church. And then people will just start falling in love with Jesus and become fully devoted followers of Jesus, and everything will just start to click. And then when we had our own facility, I thought, well, you know, when we get rid of those crummy modulars, then everything will happen and things will start to happen. And, sometimes when we get enough small group leaders and enough small groups going, then everything's just going to happen and we're going to be fulfilled and feel like we have purpose. When we teach live, remember many of you were here and we had video teaching and many of, you know, even people told me that, you know, when we have live teaching, then we'll be a real church. And some of you are going, please bring back the video teaching. I used to think, you know, when we hire our own staff, then. And it's this idea that when we reach a certain benchmark or achieve some goal, then our mission will finally be so easy. A win-then mentality. Can you relate? A win-then. In our personal life, it's like, you know, when I get my driver's license and finally, or when I graduate high school or college. And as parents, you know, when they're out of diapers, if we ever get through this diaper thing, you know, then our life will happen. You know, when they finish college, then we can finally eat again, you know. I mean, it's just, there's always something, a win then. And when this happens, I'll be finally fulfilled. My life will have purpose and meaning. And I'll be happy when I've arrived. But it seems to me that it's a bit of an illusion, the way we sometimes approach the grind. I live life under the illusion that there's something just around the corner, something coming that's finally going to really matter. And it matters more than what I'm doing right now. And it's that thing, that desire, that event, that whatever I'm looking for, that's finally going to do it for me and bring meaning and fulfillment and significance in my life. And I think as I get older, I'm not sure it's there, that next thing. Can anyone relate, or should we just do something different? Yeah? Okay. One day, that relationship, when I find her or him, that accomplishment, that vacation, there's always something around the corner. And if we're not careful, life can become so self-centered with us just chasing after that next thing that we miss the day. And culture's happy to help. I've mentioned this before. I was watching some of the advertising this week, and I was looking for a certain phrase. And it was this phrase, you deserve it. And it's everywhere. If you start looking for it, it's like, you deserve it. You should do this. You deserve it. And so it's hard to be selfless in our culture, isn't it? But the rub comes when we look at what Jesus said. And this has been kind of the core of our series. He said, to follow me, you have to deny self. You have to deny yourself. Pick up your cross, which is a metaphor for dying, you know, to self, and follow me. And Paul, he kind of takes it a step further, I think, in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 31. He says, whether you eat or drink, or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. Do it all for the glory of God. Can we just say that phrase together? All. For the glory of God. Whatever it is. Washing dishes? Do it all for the glory of God. Changing diapers? Running kids to soccer practice? Mowing the lawn? You know, all of it. Do it all for the glory of God. And I think the two examples that Paul gives are noteworthy, because he says, eat or drink. I mean, don't these things seem insignificant? And kind of really small? Eat or drink? I mean, do you know anyone who doesn't eat or drink? If you do, they're not alive, right? I just think it's interesting that I would have said, you know, when you go to Africa on a mission trip, do it all for the glory of God. You know, when you pray for someone, you know, out in public, do it all for the glory of God. But he comes down to like the most basic stuff. When you eat and drink. I think you could put breathe in there. When you eat and drink. And I think that's significant. Because he really does mean all of it. Do all of it for the glory of God. And if I'm honest, most of what I do is for the glory of Jack. The glory of self. I mean, when I really break it down, it's for me. So why does Jesus teach us to deny ourselves? I mean, does he just want us to be miserable? What is it? Is he a control freak? I think it's because he knows something about us. Because he created us. And I think that he knows that fulfillment in life is not something that's around the corner, that's going to happen later, that it happens now, that it happens today, that it happens in your grind, in the mundane, in the small stuff, if you'll do it for the glory of God. So three questions. What if the work is the reward? What if the work is the reward? When you think of your work, what if there's reward in that? I read an article this week that a third of retirees are doing what they're calling reverse retirement. Have you guys seen that? A third of retirees are reverse retiring and going back into the marketplace and working either full-time or part-time. And it's not a financial thing. It's across the board. It doesn't matter if you got a lot of money or a little bit of money. And I think it's because people are retiring figuring out, wait a minute, there was something to the grind when I gave it to God. And he showed up, and I looked for him, and I brought him in, and I introduced him, and I, you know, brought him into the equation of my grind. Second question is, what if the prize is in the process? What if the prize is in the actual process? See, so many times we're thinking about, if I just get past this, then. If I just get through this, then. And what if you can be grateful in the grind? Whatever you do, you can find meaning and fulfillment and divine satisfaction in the grind when you do it for the glory of God. Well, Paul goes on to tell us in 1 Corinthians 15:9, he says this. He says, I am the least of the apostles. I do not even deserve to be called an apostle because I persecuted the church of God. And what he's saying is, look, before I became a follower of Jesus, before I was converted, I was an enemy to the church. I was an enemy to Christ. I imprisoned followers of Jesus. Like, that was his job. That was his main job. And it took a lot of church leaders years to trust Paul, as it should have, because they didn't know if this was just some kind of ploy. You know, did he really hear from Jesus? Was he really converted? And so he's saying, look, I don't even deserve to be here. I don't even deserve to be called an apostle. Many of us have a pre-Jesus life, right? Many of you have a pre-Jesus life. My friend Hans Brewer, he calls it BC, before Christ. And he'll talk about things that he used to do, and you know, but that was BC. That was BC. You know, we have a BC, and Paul had the same thing. But it informed and it drove his work. And it drove what he did. And you're going to see that here in a minute. But we all have that, a past. And in verse 10, he says, but by the grace of God, I am what I am. And his grace to me was not without, what is that word? It's up there. Effect. This grace affected me. I deserved one thing. And I got another thing. I deserved punishment, and I got something entirely different. This grace affected me, and it has made me who I am because I let it affect me. And for many of you, this is your story. Not only did you BC before Christ not do anything for God's kingdom, but you kind of worked against it when you think about it. And you maybe kind of kept some people away from it. And you were an enemy to it. And then grace showed up in your life. And by the grace of God, you now are who you are because that grace has affected you. Because his grace for you was not without effect. Now, there's some people here today and the grace hasn't affected you yet. It hasn't hit your heart. And so sometimes when we talk about the things we talk about, it seems a little strange. But that's okay. You're where you're supposed to be. We're glad you're here. We have a saying around here that you can belong before you believe. And I think if you just keep showing up and you're open to hearing from God and the things from God, that there'll probably be a day when that grace will affect you. And then like Paul, you'll have a BC. You'll look back and go, okay, this is me before, but now I'm somebody different. you'll have a but. Because he says, but by the grace of God, I am who I am. And we all need to reach that point in life where we have a but. A big but. Can't believe I said that. We're not putting that on the internet, not part two. So the second half of verse 10, Paul says this. I worked harder than all of them. He's referring to the other apostles. I worked harder than all of them. Like, check my stats. I worked harder than all of those guys. I don't deserve to be here. I'm the least of them. But I did work harder than all of them. Isn't that interesting? I don't think he's bragging. I think he's just making a fact. Like, if there were apostle baseball cards and you looked on the back, he would have the stats. Like, to prove it. He'd be the guy. I worked harder than all of them, but yet, you know, it wasn't me. It was the grace of God. And so you can take that how you want. Is Paul kind of losing it here? Or I remember hearing this young preacher that he got to teach for one of the first times. You know, those of us who teach have all been there. And usually people give you a lot of grace, and they'll come up and say, "Oh, that was wonderful," and stuff. When it really probably wasn't. And he wanted to seem humble, so he just said, "You know, it wasn't me. It was all God in me." And the old preacher looked at him and said, "Yeah, you weren't that good." Because if it was God, it would have been a lot better. So I don't know what Paul's exactly doing here, but I think he really is just stating a fact. I traveled farther. I suffered more. I started more churches. You know, I was in prison more. I wrote more of the Bible. I worked harder than all the rest of them. But it's because of the grace that transformed me. I worked out of a place of gratitude. I was grateful in my grind. I was grateful in it. Because I have received so much grace. And isn't that a great place to work from and to be grateful from? And he seemed to have it harder than everyone. Shipwrecks and prisons and bitten by poisonous snakes, and he just shakes them off. You know, no permanent address, just moved around. So what can we learn by looking at the work of Paul and the life of Paul? When I look at this, it seems like he's not wishing his current season away for the next season. He's not wishing this away, thinking there's something around the corner that's going to be so much better. Wherever he was, he's all in. Whoever he's with, he's all in. No matter how hard it is, he's all in. He's not thinking, when I get past this season of work or this obstacle or this happens, then. Real success is just around the corner, because whatever he did it for the glory of God. When he was in prison, it wasn't, you know, when I get out, I'll just get back to work. It's like, hey, someone's chained to me, they're going to hear about Jesus. The jailer, he's going to hear about Jesus. We're going to get this guy saved, the jailer saved, jailer's whole family saved. That's how he operated. I would have been in there just like crying, "Get me out of here. I've got to get back to work." Paul didn't see it that way. He's in prison. He's like, "You know what? I got a lot of time on my hands. Give me a pen, get me some paper, I'll write the Bible." Isn't that what he did? I don't know if I would have done that. When he's shipwrecked, he didn't look at it, "Well, God didn't protect us. We've been praying for protection. He didn't protect us. We shipwrecked." He looked at it like, "Hey, I'm not dead. So I'm continuing on with my mission. I'll keep working." When he got sideways with Barnabas, he didn't say, "You know, Christians are so mean. I'm out of here. I quit. I mean, they're so mean." He just was like, "Man, we don't have time for this. We've got a lot of work to do." Like, humanity hangs in the balance. People's future for eternity hangs in the balance. And Paul got that. And it inspired him and it drove him to be the hardest worker, the hardest working apostle, to show up early and to stay late and to bring God into all of it and to glorify God in every situation. So how does does this apply to us? Maybe you're changing diapers all day. But maybe that's where God has you for this season. Bring him into it. Glorify God in it. Maybe you feel like your work is, you know, at a dead-end job. Do it for the glory of God. And hopefully, we realize that the real prize just might be in the process. So before I finish, three enemies of being grateful in the grind. If you're taking notes, three enemies of being grateful in the grind. Number one is the recliner. Everybody have a nice recliner? We have one. I just like to get in it and be useless and do nothing. The recliner, the seduction of comfort, right? The seduction of comfort. When I'm a little more comfortable, when I've got a little more in my bank account, when I get a house that has granite countertops, I will have arrived. You know, for me, I think it's those heated floors. I've tried them, but I've never had them. Like in my bathroom, I'd like just heated floors, you know. Maybe for you, it's a pool. I remember at our house when we lived in a little house. It was about 800 square feet, one bathroom, six of us, four kids, mom and dad. And we always had to do the dishes. And there were four of us. So, you know, there's scraping, there's washing, there's rinsing, and there's drying. Right? And then putting away. But I think mom did that. But I remember when we got our first dishwasher. Like it came and it got installed. And for a while, we thought that was pretty cool. But it wasn't long before we weren't grateful anymore for that dishwasher. We were complaining about putting it in and pushing a button. You know? And that's how we are. If I can only get that thing, then life will be good. And I'll have arrived. But God never called us to easy, did he? He never called us to easy. Because easy doesn't change the world, does it? And we're supposed to be world changers. Another enemy to grateful in the grind is the shiny thing. The shiny thing, the latest distraction. You're plugging away, you're on task, you're on point, and then you hear that noise from your phone. Ding! What could it be? What did she post? It could be a picture of lunch. I don't know, but I need to look. And Netflix sends you a message. Based on watching this, there's a 96% chance that you should watch this. And it never ends, does it? The shiny thing is always out there. I probably did it. I probably did this one. So I'm saying we. But I think we overprogram our kids sometimes, chasing the shiny thing. You see, we can't be grateful in the grind when we're constantly distracted by the shiny thing. Number three is the towel. Enemy to the grind is the towel, the perpetual temptation to quit and throw in the towel. We've all been there. You're trying to get your finances in order. You've made a great plan for January 2019. And it's just like, this is too hard. Just put it on the credit card because I need that. Following Jesus. You know, I tried that. I went to church twice. Didn't work. I'm done. Throwing in the towel. You know, they don't appreciate me around here. They don't know my full potential. I should be running this place. Right? I mean, who made them boss anyway? I mean, sure, they took all the risk and started the company 15 years ago, but who made them boss? Everyone's always telling me what to do around here. You ever been there? I've seen a lot of smiles. Grateful in the grind. I'm just going to quit this job. I'm sure there's something better. Throwing in the towel. Relationships. Marriage. Just throw in the towel. Throw it in. Or you can pick up the towel and wipe the sweat off your forehead and invite Jesus into your grind and ask, God, what is this all about? Is there more going on here than I know about? Are you transforming me maybe in the grind? Are there people around me that you want me to see and you want me to witness to, and you want me to influence. Is there more to it? And there's a little piece that I just thought of this morning when I woke up and I typed out a few things. So this is a little random. It's not completely put together. But I think it's important, and maybe this is a solution to the towel. What do you proclaim? What do you say in the grind? What comes out of your mouth? Have you thought about that? Is it truth? Is it positive? Is it death? What are you proclaiming? Because I thought about this morning a little bit. There's incredible power in words. We're the only creatures on the planet. I think it's part of us bearing the image of God. Remember he said he made us in his image? We have the ability to speak something out, to proclaim something. When God created the world, he spoke everything into existence. He could have thought it, right? It doesn't say he thought about it and it happened. It said he spoke it. And I think there's something important about what we're speaking. Because our words can bring death to a situation that is alive, or our words can bring life to a situation that is death. And I don't know, this might be fighting words right here, but I'm not sure that we have the right to vent to other people. I mean, we need to be really careful about venting to other people. It's very selfish. We can vent to God, absolutely. He wants you to vent to him. Vent to God. But I'm not sure when we're venting that we're bringing life into certain situations. I also think that when we speak something, when we proclaim something, there's something supernatural that happens. There's something that happens in the heavenly realm that lines. I can't explain it all. I don't get it, but I think something happens. Remember when Peter had messed up and Jesus said, he asked him three times, what did he ask him? Well, that's what he responded. He said, do you love me? But he wanted him to say something back. Why is that? I think he might have woke him up one time to get him to say something back. And I think when Peter spoke those things, it somehow restored him. It restored Peter by saying it out, by speaking it out. Maybe I'll do a series on this, but this is just extra credit. You guys can talk about this week. But I think there's something there. So let's think about what we're saying when we're in the grind. What's coming out of our mouths? Maybe Grandma was right when she said, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. Maybe Grandma was onto something, right? With that. And hopefully we realize that the work is in the reward, the prize is in the process, and we can be grateful in the grind. So back to Paul, Acts chapter 20, verse 23. He says this, I only know that in every city, the Holy Spirit warns me that prison and hardships are facing me. So God's speaking to him. He's saying, you know, he's like, God, what do you got for me next? Well, you're going to go into this city, and here's what you got. You got prison coming, you got hardships, you got all this kind of stuff. And Paul's like, all right, good to know. Verse 24, however, I consider my life worth nothing to me. My only aim is to finish the race and complete the task the Lord Jesus has given me. The task of testifying to the good news of God's grace. That same grace that affected him, that had an effect on him. See, if that grace hasn't affected us, then we can't do any of this stuff. We can't do this in our own power. That grace has to affect us. And Paul understood purpose. He had purpose. And you know what always follows purpose? It's passion. And he's definitely passionate about everything. He's passionate about the grind. He's not passionate about the grind. He's passionate in the hardship, but he's passionate about his purpose. He didn't like getting bit by snakes any more than we do, or shipwrecked, or thrown in prison, or beaten. But he was passionate about his purpose, and grace had affected him. And he realized that his purpose was this. He was an ambassador to the Most High God. Look up ambassador this week. It's a pretty high status, high ranking place to be. Ambassador. And here's the deal, you guys are too. If you're a follower of Jesus and you've given him the steering wheel of your life, you are an ambassador of the Most High God. Wherever you are, at work, whoever you're with, you are his spokesperson. You represent him. And Paul understood that, and he understood his purpose. And I believe that when we bring God into our ordinary, what seems mundane, our eating and our drinking, that he makes it extraordinary. That when the supernatural comes to the natural doesn't, the supernatural doesn't become natural. The natural is affected by the supernatural, and it becomes supernatural. It changes. Whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God.